Welcome to the Fundamental Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Saladino. This podcast is the result of my relentless search to understand and correct the roots of chronic disease and illness. In this podcast, I will share with you everything I have learned about how to live the most healthy and radical life possible. Thanks for joining me on this journey. What is up, you guys? Look at this, a bonus podcast episode. Occasionally, I will do these when I have so many amazing things, I just want to get them all out real fast. And you know what else is really amazing is that by the time you hear this podcast, the Carnivore Code will be live on Amazon. That is right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, germs and germettes. The Carnivore Code is now live on Amazon. But wait, you say, Paul, it's not February the 25th. That's right. I released it early. Just as a surprise, I wanted to get it all out for you guys. So you can go to thecarnivorecodebook.com on Friday, February the 21st, I am certain, almost certain, nearly certain, basically totally certain that the Carnivore Code book will be available on Amazon and the ebook will be delivered to you tomorrow on the 22nd of February. The official release date was February 25th, but look, it was just too good to keep under wraps. So the book is out now. Go grab it. Let me know what you think. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks, you guys. I've got all kinds of fun stuff in store. So thecarnivorecodebook.com. It is on Amazon and everywhere. And we have an ebook, which will be out on the 22nd. The audiobook will be out a couple of weeks after that. Stay tuned. If you like this podcast, please leave me a review on iTunes. It is doing so good. I love these conversations. I have so many good ones coming up. Check out my newsletter, which is called the Fundamental Health Insider. You can subscribe at my website, which is carnivoremd.com. My guest this week is an amazing dude. His name is Aaron Alexander. He has a podcast of his own called The Align Podcast, and he is a movement magician. He is a really cool dude. We got to talk about all kinds of fun movement stuff in this podcast, and man, it was a good time. We were deep squatting the whole time. We were doing sitting Indian style. We were doing 90-90s. You'll learn about all that in this podcast, and you'll learn about why the simplest biohacks, the best biohacks are really free, and they involve looking at the horizon, walking with bare feet, walking outside, being in nature, and moving in a series of patterns that are quite ancestral that we've all forgotten, one of which is the deep squat, one of which is hanging. It was just a fun conversation with my buddy Aaron Alexander. He has a book as well, which is called The Align Method. It's pretty awesome. And I think this is a piece of our primal sort of lifestyle that we have all kind of forgotten. It couples very well with the diet that we are doing, or at least thinking about diet, whether it's carnivore, carnivore-ish, whatever is best for you. So check out this podcast with my buddy Aaron Alexander. I think you guys were really dig this one and, you know, begin moving. Don't forget to move in a certain way. Be outside, be in the sun, live a radical life. That's what this podcast is about, is how we freaking live a radical life. We don't need plants, in my opinion. We just need to do movement and do some radical stuff and avoid those plant toxins. Again, you can get the least toxic plants if you want, but I think that animal foods and movement are where it's at. So this is a fun one with my buddy, Aaron Alexander. I'm not afraid to be weird, as you'll hear in this podcast. Weird is good. Break the norm. Aaron's not afraid to be weird. And I hope you guys will enjoy it. Listen afterwards for what is going on with me. All right, we're rolling. Aaron, thanks for coming on the podcast, my man.
Paul, thank you for having me.
It's good to be out here with you. We got to We got to shoot bows today. We've had all kinds of conversations, man, but let's talk about what you've got going on. So I'm super stoked about this. Tell me about the definition of the word weird.
Oh, that's great. Isn't that great?
Where does the word weird come from?
Weird is you and me, Paul.
You're damn right with
most
that.
Everyone listening to this would be my sense, would be my guess. So weird is an old English word, and the original meaning was fate, or to so the word be used as being in control of one's fate. So a person that is weird is going outside of the ignorance of the crowd.
So may all of you listening to this be weird.
weird people.
And I think you are so right that the majority of people that listen to both of our podcasts, yours is called The Align Podcast, are weird. They are in control of their own fate. They are trying to take things into their own hands. And believe me, I've been called weird for the things that I believe. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I heard you say that on the podcast with Aubrey Marcus, and I was like, that's cool. And so how have you felt weird? How have you taken your fate into your own hands with regard to movement stuff? How did this all get started?
Yeah, well, we're doing it right now. So right now, as we're recording this, we're stacking several really valuable variables. One, we're spending time crossing our legs on the ground. We've gone in and out of, like, we were squatting at one point. We've done kind of like 90-90 positions and straddle positions. And we've essentially, since we've been doing this conversation, just from a mechanical perspective, we've been in a yoga class the whole time. We're also doing some cold thermogenesis, you know, so it's not like cold, but we're outside. It's getting colder. We were exposing ourselves to the sun, you know, so we're literally like changing the shape of our eyeballs and having all these amazing neurochemical reactions happening from just being out here. Changing the shape of the eyeballs, because when people don't get adequate exposure to the sun, it's associated with myopia or nearsightedness. And so it can literally, it's like when we have that chemical reaction, it's more than just vitamin D, you know, it's charging you in every level. Like, we run on the sun. So when we're pulling ourselves out of that, the problems will come without a doubt. We're also being exposed to a lot of plants, you know, so the phytoncides and all the chemical reactions that we get from breathing the plants in around here. It's turned to, you know, what is it called? Shinrin Yoku is the nature bathing.
Forest bathing.
Yeah, so walking out in the woods, you know, it creates this little immune response. And it's like we're having all these potential adaptive moments here all stacked up into this variable sandwich that is just literally sitting on the ground outside to have a conversation with a person, community. You know, so that's like, this is it. You know, so this is very strange. This is weird to do this. It would be way more common to do this under some blaring artificial blue lights in some, you know, the fifth floor of some high rise place, and under, you know, the blue lights outside of the actual recording area, and then in air conditioned air that deionizes the thing, and then around a bunch of Wi-Fi, and then around a bunch of people that are hunched over staring down into their phone. That would be very common and no one would bat an eye. But the idea of two dudes crossing their legs and sitting out in the sun and having a conversation, you know, it's like, what are they smoking? What's what's going on there?
Very weird.
Very weird, man.
And I love it. Yeah. And I think that to do valuable things in our lives, we have to be weird. We have to do weird. We have to go outside of the norm, and we have to take matters into our own hands. The common things don't lead to radical lives, in my opinion. Would you agree?
It's the opposite. You know, it's like, so like Mark Twain said, there's statistics. Oh no, about statistics. He said there's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. You know, so I try to be very, you know, I think suspicious of where statistics point. You know, and in my creation of my book, you know, I was looking a lot of information, and if you type something into the internet, you'll essentially get confirmed. You know, and so, you know, so I try to be suspicious of even like my own ideas, you know, but statistically, the direction of modernity seems to be going in, you know, a direction of increased usage of anti-anxiety medication and antidepressants and even suicidal ideation among adolescents. And, you know, the people that are like the kings of the world, like middle-aged men, have the highest incidence of suicide. So when we get to that point, you know, the like affluenza, the disease of affluence, which we were kind of talking about before when we were shooting the bow, that's the more we get, and the more that we have the opportunity to outsource all of this internal movement function towards technology, that's where we get into this slippery slope, because we're applauded for that, because it's an indication that you're winning the Western game. But at a biological level, your body's like, oh, no, we needed that to survive. You know? And so, you know, with the process of consuming food, for example, like I would extend the digestive process beyond just the, you know, the pulling your bow back, if we're talking carnivore, and not the pulling your bow back. I would say that's a part of the, you know, I would go extend it beyond just going to the market, grabbing food and putting it in your face, you know, and beginning peristalsis and digestion. Like that's, yeah, that's digestion for sure. That's a part of getting nutrition. But I would say the process of hunting and gathering and being out in the woods and being exposed to the elements and looking out into the distance. And then, oh, I see something. If we're talking, you know, carnivore, I see an animal up there. I'm stalking it. I'm getting low. I'm paying attention to my senses are coming online. I'm hearing sound behind me. I'm measuring the distance in front of me. I'm crawling. I'm pulling the bow back. I'm using my vision. Whoop-oop. I get it. Okay, now I'm tracking it. Now I'm bringing it back. And now, you know, put like all of that, that's moving nutrition through your body, you know, and then finally, okay, now it continues to go on the nutrition assembly line. Okay, the food goes into my face. Okay, back through. And now I keep walking and I move the nutrition through my body. If you pull all of that movement component out and you just go, okay, I lay on my couch, I press buttons on my phone and nutrition goes into my face hole, I don't think that's a very full life.
I would agree with you completely. I think that there's a lot of nutrition beyond the food. There's a lot of nutrition in the gathering, the seeking and the gathering and the hunting of the food that we're missing out on. And that is a lot of movement. Yeah. And that is a lot of those things that you were talking about. And I love that we talked about that when we were using the bows, that I think both of us believe that this modernity, this gentrification of humans, this industrialization of our lives has robbed us of fundamentally meaningful experiences that are some of the most enjoyable things that we can do as humans. Mm-hmm. Just walking around in the woods is so enjoyable. Yeah. Walking around in the woods, hunting something that's going to become your nourishment or the nourishment of your tribe and your family is incredibly enjoyable. Yeah. As you're doing that, you see far and near and the eyes change. As you suggested, you're thinking about your posture. You're connecting with the earth, depending on the type of shoes that you're wearing. You're smelling things. We're in these natural environments, as you say, the Shinrin Yoku, the forest bathing that we know can activate the parasympathetic nervous system. This is the nutrition that comes before the nutrition. Yeah. And we've forgotten about it. And we think, or the narrative that is sold to us, is that it's better, it's more convenient to be able to get in your car and sit in a vehicle made of polyester and flame retardants while you drive burning old dinosaurs to a blue light lit grocery store where you get a piece of meat that's already carved for you and you go back home and you cook it on your stove while you're watching Netflix. So that's you're right, that you're so right that we've been told that that is success in the westernized world, when in fact so many of the fundamental experiences that we need, so much of the nutrition beyond food, we're being robbed of. And I think that both you and I express the sentiment that we just kind of want to check out. Yeah. We just want to go back to the way it was.
Well, I also want to check in. You know, I feel like, so what I wrote the book about, and I'm not going to just continually shamelessly go back to plugging and referring back to it.
No, I want to talk about
most all of this is essentially just exactly what the book is about. So it works. Was how do we respect the present modern mold that we exist in and not have to be complete tinfoil hat wearing, you know, barefoot, taking my pants off, doing a down dog at a wedding. And like, we don't need to be like, wow, I'm so like, this is, y'all are off and I know the answer. It's like, I think, how do we respect the present paradigm and make subtle changes within that we can be also respecting our internal biology? You know, so a simple thing is like, I don't think anybody needs to burn their couch or, you know, anybody needs to do anything overly crazy. You can treat your couch as a tool and start to utilize really fundamental mechanics in the way that you inhabit yourself on that couch. So it actually becomes, you know, look at a kid on a couch or an animal on a couch or a chair or anything. They just use it as a play tool, you know, because they still have that playful, full, robust, dynamic movement program running in their body. And then from a young age, you know, we go through all these developmental patterns and we're starting to open and extending our spine and we're hiking or crawling or falling and we're, you know, and then all of a sudden we put kids in strollers and, you know, then we put them into baby seats and then we put them into kindergarten and first grade. And now, you know, now it's, we put a screen in front of their face because they need to be ready for this technological age, you know, and we kind of pull that play out of them. And we tell them that if they are playful and they are dynamic and they are creative and they do just want to climb a tree instead of getting another Scantron test, then they have mental disabilities. Like they have a disorder.
And you need a stimulant. And you better take Ritalin.
Yeah, you need. Yeah, exactly. You know, and so instead of what we're seeing with that is we're seeing the These symptoms are a product of taking the human animal out of their natural environment and putting them into a dysfunctional zoo. So what I'm suggesting is, you know, there's options. One, you know, you could check out, you could sell all your stuff and, you know, move to India or out in the woods or do something like that. I mean, if you move to India, you're still going to be around all this stuff. But you could just do that, but there's maybe like, you know, one in a million people might actually do that. So for everyone else, what we can do is we can start to pay attention to how do we start to take some of those fundamental mechanics that we get from a more ancestral lifestyle and how do we bring them into our experience in the office and our experience traveling at the airport and our experience at our home, so that our, you know, our wife doesn't divorce us.
I love it. I love it. So how do we do that, man?
Well, one big thing is to spend time on the ground, man.
I love it.
You know, like that's where we come from. You know, what you're doing right now, you're doing so many beautiful things. You're taking your ankles through a full range of motion. Like, so Paul's in a squat right now. You're contracting all of your muscles. So you're recirculating all that lymphatic fluid and all those interstitial fluids that are moving back through your system to be recirculated. You're also taking your pelvic floor muscles through a full range of motion. You're taking all of your muscles through this full range of motion. That squat action acts almost as like a plunge. You know, so you're plunging that pelvic floor and all the diaphragms, your plantar fascia and your meniscus and all the way through. And you're creating this movement of that vital fluid through your organs, and you're plunging yourself. It's a plunge.
Poof, squeeze.
Poof, poof. That's what runs your body. You know, it seems very apparent with like the lungs. Like, of course, my lungs expand and contract. My heart expand and contract. And kind of this spiral pattern, which is kind of cool. You know, but we think of the idea of like our organs moving. That's, I don't understand. They actually have this thing called motility, which is this subtle rotation towards the midline and away from the midline, towards the midline, away from midline. So healthy organs are continually have this motion throughout the day. You know, so that's, and then on top of that are just like walking, fancy term, contralateral motion, but walking, you could think of your organs almost like rags that you are twisting and turning. And if you have some gunk inside of a rag, the way that you get that gunk out is you twist that thing, twist out the fluid, drips it back out, and then you can scrub the counter again and get more gunk on it. That's you. You know, you're this collection of, if you look at it from a, like a muscular perspective, maybe 640 different little rags, you know, or like muscles. Muscles more like pockets. You know, so it's those relationships between those pockets is the big value. And when we are living in a lifestyle that compresses all of those pockets and those relationships between, they become dehydrated and fluid isn't able to perforate. And now once you have that initial signal of dehydration, now it's hard to get any more hydration into there. It gets dried up. Think of like a really dry sponge. You pour water on it, just kind of like splashes up over it. So those places in our body that haven't been moved because we live in a modern lifestyle that is essentially, for the most part, you know, having a screen in front of us, hunching over, looking at that, and then sitting on the couch and the plane seat and then even the exercise machine, you know, I'm doing seated rows. Like, why are you sitting in a gym? Like, why would you do that? Like, if anything, you know, at least go to a gym and do things where you're not just recapitulating that same motion that you've been doing since like you've been put in a stroller since you're a little person. Like, do anything but that. And that being said, I think seated machines are actually completely fine as long as you have a good practice of doing the other stuff outside of that. But if you're a person that is just sitting on a chair all day long for the most part, which is so many people, and then you go to a gym and do mostly seated equipment, that's like crazy.
That's ludicrous.
And so rounding all that stuff up, you know, the valuable thing is in your body, you have all of these different aqueous spaces. And when they become dehydrated because they aren't being twisted and turned and expanded and contracted, there's a fancy term called mechanotransduction, which is the chemical stimuli that manifests as a product of that chemical or mechanical movement of a cell. You know, so as you go through and twist and turn all those cells, that's information. You know, your cells are hearing you. And so when you don't move those cells, they say, oh, maybe we're sick. Okay, I hear you. I think you're sick. You know?
You're not moving.
You're not moving. There must be a problem.
Why are you not walking through the woods stalking a deer?
Yeah, exactly.
Why are you sitting down so much? You must be sick.
You must be sick.
Because no,
or maybe depressed,
right,
or defensive.
Or injured.
Yeah.
Because at no point in our evolution in the last 3 million years of human evolution have we sat that much.
Yeah, it's wild.
So our sedentary lives, our lack of varieties and positions and squeezing the rag and contralateral movements and squatting and spending time on the ground.
And reaching up.
Reaching up high. Reaching up high.
Yeah, hang off of stuff.
These are the brachiation, so the hanging. We can talk about that too.
Yeah.
These are really sending a signal to our bodies that we're sick.
That we're, yeah. And when we do the inverse, it sends a signal that we're alive.
We're alive.
You know, that's why, like, as far as, you know, dance is one of the best tools to improve cognitive function, you know, and reverse any potential, you know, so like Alzheimer's and dementia and such. It's one of the best preventatives for that because it's like this, it's like a this beautiful orchestra, you know, all of the musicians are playing, you know, so as a, compare that to like, solving a crossword puzzle, you know, sitting sedentary and using your brain to solve a crossword puzzle, the thing that any fucking computer can do with no problem. What a computer cannot do is it cannot reach out, grab a glass, bring it up to your lips, pull it in and back down as smoothly as a human being can. That takes some brain power. Now let's add that and say, okay, what if we dance? What if we're attuning ourselves to music? We're allowing that music to move through us and move our body and twist those rags almost as though like the music is like massaging us. I know this is getting a little bit out there, you know, but now let's coordinate that movement with another person. Oh my God. Oh, now I feel like maybe a little insecure. Am I dancing well enough? Okay. Like, all right, I got to think at first. I feel a little clunky because I'm thinking so much, but then eventually, you know, those synaptic networks, those pathways clear up enough that I'm able to fluidly do this motion. I'm carving these paths and it comes as like second nature. You know, so that experience of attuning yourself to that music and then in rhythm with another person, finding this balance and these twists and turns, it's like, oh my God, it's like the grand finale of a 4th of July fireworks display. Like all the fireworks are going off for that.
In the body
and the mind.
Steak dance.
And the emotions.
Steak dance.
Yeah.
That's like my thing. Well, maybe we'll get you steak dancing when this video comes out.
Oh, okay. I'll do a steak dance.
Or smoothie dancing.
I'm down.
You can do it every
time. I'm down for where? Carpaccio?
Carpaccio
I'm
dance.
Down. Yeah.
I love it. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I love to dance. And anyone that listens to my stuff or has seen me on Instagram knows that I'm not shy about embarrassing myself and showing that.
That's great.
I love it. Yeah, and it feels that way for me. Unfortunately, the majority of the writing that I did for my book was in a seated position, but it sounds like you did a lot of writing on the floor for this one. So you were able to stay in that way. So let's just walk people through. So that it's the title of the book is The Align Method, 5 Movement Principles for Stronger Body, Sharper Mind, Stress-Free Life.
Yeah.
We've probably talked about some of them already. Is being on the floor one of the 5?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So just a little like finisher on that. So cultures that spend time with regularity on the food, which is on the floor, which is you forever, you know, all of your ancestors, I was just a part of, but since maybe call it the agrarian age or, you know, there was a kind of a transition.
The Neolithic revolution.
That happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where all of a sudden, and then it's, you know, sitting on a chair is like an indication of prestige and, you know, what if we covered in, you know, gold and precious metals and it's like, ha ha, royalty. The royal are the ones that are in trouble. You know, like that's written in the Bible. That's written all over the place. Once you get all on your high horses and you kind of just sit there and you let other people do all the work, that work is what heals us. No, we need like the peasants that are out working in the sun, gathering and picking stuff up and moving all that stuff. Those are the healthy ones.
Right.
It's wild. You know, so spending time on the ground, cultures that are still doing that with more regularity, which I hope is Western culture very soon, they have minimal to no incidence of osteoarthritis of the hips, very low incidence of that in the knees. Fall risk just becomes like a non-issue. You know, so this is like Northern Africa and Eastern Mediterranean, Southeast Asia. Those are the main places that have been like studied with it. Those places that are just going through this regular human movement, it's nothing revolutionary. Like this is old school. This is just who you are. It's a part of your DNA. Like a baby has facets. A fetus has facets around their tibia to go into a deep squat, that deep dorsiflexion that you were just doing with your ankles. That's stock Like that comes with the
base model.
Yeah, that's base. Yeah, so if we, so it's just, and it's the same thing with your shoulders. You know, your shoulders are your the stock base model. They're brachiating shoulders, man. Like monkey
brachiating is hanging from
up over your head.
Yep, hanging from a bar over your head.
Hanging from a bar over your head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, you can look at the shape of your hands and the length of the collarbone. Like monkey bars is actually a misnomer. It ought to be human bars or ape bars is something that's kind of like clever.
Sure.
You know, so that ability to go up overhead like that, that's not a thing for monkeys. That's a human thing. Mm. You know, so if you just look at it from more of like an evolutionary perspective, these indigenous movement patterns, if you were to just look at the body like forensically and say like, okay, like I see this ankle, I see this shoulder joint, you know, what's it supposed to do? You know, it would be like, okay, would just sitting kind of a little protracted, meaning forward and medially rotated, you know, meaning, you know, people get that, and kind of hunching over, staring at a phone for a high percentage of the time, you'd probably be like, I don't think that's all it does. I think there's some coding in there that by it bring up overhead, say to do a snatch in a gym, or, you know, kettlebell snatch, or any form, or hanging off of a jungle gym, or, you know, in yoga, you spend so much time with your arms up over your head. All these practices, the arms would go up over the head. It literally heals the shoulder. We can get more into that. But with the floor sitting, it also heals the ankles and the knees and the hips, circulates fluids. Yeah, it's a really big deal. Like, our bodies are built to heal. You know, so there's an interesting quote from the guy who founded osteopathy called Andrew Taylor Still, and he said, "Harmony dwells where obstructions do not exist." You know, and so if you look at all of these obstructions, which you could say even the removal of certain baseline human movement patterns, that becomes an obstruction, because now all of a sudden there's this buildup and this callousing around those joints and those structures. Whereas if you just remove that obstruction, which is a dysfunctional movement pattern, and put yourself back into that flow of what you've been doing since forever, even doing that in your office or in all these still common places, your body says, woo, it winds up. It says, oh yeah, I know how to do this. You pull that out long enough, it starts to get pissed.
Exactly. So by sitting on the floor, are people sitting? So we're talking like deep squat.
Deep squat, 90-90, which we're both in right now. So that's like, I mean, people look it up on like the internet or my book, or I have videos of it and all that stuff. So that would be a great position. And then a straddle position, which most people probably get, like legs going straight out. Mm-hmm. And laying on your side, laying on your belly. You know, so as you're doing that, like your floor is a physical therapist and a massage therapist and maybe even a psycho-mental talk therapist all wrapped up into one. You know, because those emotions and such are stored in postural patterns. You know, when you're communicating to somebody, you're not communicating to their words. You're talking to their body language, their tone, their pacing of language. You know, so there's a guy called Albert Mehrabian that he's came up with a principle called the 55-38-7 principle. He's a UCLA professor in the 70s. They came up with this thing. And when there's incongruence in our communication, 93% of the time, you will trust my body language and my tone over the 7% of the words. 38 was tonality, 55 was body language. You know, so if there's incongruence in this communication dance that we're doing, because it's exactly what it is. As we're talking to each other, we're essentially just dancing to each other. And we're dancing and singing. You know, and so when you pull that, if you pull that that dance component out, or if you just observe that dance component, like you can see what people are talking about from afar. Like watch a Friends episode or some type of sitcom and like put it on mute, you pretty much get it. Like you can watch the communication of them kind of like dancing at each other. You know, so you think like, oh no, I'm not a dancer. It's like, no, bitch, you dance. Like you dance all day long. But for the most part, you're doing perhaps, if you look around the world, you're doing a forward head posture, upper cross syndrome is a fancy term for it, rolled forward shoulders, looking to my phone, kind of like slumping through the world dance. You know, and that has an indication from the other animals that are watching you and perceiving you. They have a sense of what that means. And then you internally, because your cells don't have eyes, but they feel where you're at in space, they're receiving that dance and saying, oh, okay, cool. Something's up. You know, and so if we can start to maybe, okay, what if I'm going to take a dance class? you shake your hips up, maybe you do some hoots and hollers, you come out like, wow, I feel alive. You finally used your body in a way that's like joyous. You know, whereas most of the time you're doing the I have too much shit on my plate dance. I need to get someplace dance. I feel anxious and uncomfortable around these people dance. There's a lot of different dances.
A lot of different dances. It depends which ones we do. Yeah. You know, there's a there's some ecstatic dance around here in San Diego that I want to go check out. And it's just the same kind of thing, just making sure to be able to dance in a joyous way from time to time and be aware of the dances we're doing every day.
Yeah, it never stops.
Exactly. Yeah. So sitting on the floor, 90-90 position, people can find that or they can see that cross-legged, deep squat, laying on the floor. Do you own furniture?
Yeah, no, I have a couch. I have like I think I'm going to get rid of it and just do like all like pillows, but I also have I have a really comfy rug. So with
I don't even have a couch.
With the floor stuff. Yeah, well, it's this thing I think that's like I've learned that I think if you get too rebellious, you end up getting crucified. You know, it's a little like too out there. So I'm like, dude, we're fine. Like your car, so you don't need to sell your car. Like keep your car. It's cool. Road trips are fun. Just you could change the shape of your seat a little bit. You know, so throw up, you know, a small, like a narrow foam roller or bottle or jacket or pillow or something behind your thoracic spine. So instead of it being a bucket seat, it's more of like a neutral seat.
Right.
You know, so there's simple things. It's like anything, show me anything in the modern environment and I will show you how to make that a little bit more functional for a human. You know, it's just what is the intelligence of the user? What's the intelligence of the organism going into that situation? If the human animal is smart and they understand like a kid, kids are smart. They know how to heal them. There's also, you know, they're also kind of dummies in a lot of ways too. And I think there's a value of like adult awareness of like how the world works and such. But for the most part,
kids have intuition though. They have intuition with food.
Yeah, that's true. And they're looking at their relationship with gravity is their teacher as they're growing into their bodies. So they start off, you know, and they, you know, they're laying on their back and then they roll over and then they extend and they're doing this dance with gravity. Gravity is their dance partner. Also their parents and, you know, other people are dance partner too. But in this case, that subtle, you know, 9.8 meters per second squared of gravity, that's they're pushing against that. They're feeling that. And so if I want to get up from my belly, I'm going to extend I'm turning my erector muscles on. Whoa, I feel it. They're coming alive. You know, and then from there, okay, I'm going to roll over. I'm going to get up on my feet. Okay, I'm going to squat. Oh, man, I'm on my haunches. I'm squatting. All right, I'm going to stab. Oh, I fall. You know, as you're going through that, your brain is being wired. You know, all of that is associated to the emotional development, neurological development, and physical development. It's all consistent. You know, so in that, they don't have P90X or Taibo or CrossFit or anything to kind of like confuse the system, bodybuilding, isolating muscles. They don't know what a bicep is or a ab or a quad or a cat. Like they just have their body and they have their relationship with gravity. Well, that's all you have.
That's all anyone has.
That's all anyone has, man. And we pollute ourselves with these two-dimensional models of what the physical experience is because it's easier to describe the physical experience if you put it into this isolated two-dimensional textbook. And you say, ah, me, I see it, me. Like, no, that's not you. You're here. You know, so we have this idea. It's kind of like it's like a split personality in a way. We have this linear concept of what humaning is, levers and pulleys and all that stuff. But a kid, as they're going that kind of seamless relationship with gravity, they can make any situation adaptive. You know, you can put them in any dinner chair, any office chair, any plane seat, whatever, and you'll see them do all that mechanotransduction and heal their cells and circulate their fluids because they're working for their biology at that point.
I liked how you said earlier they see a couch as a play toy rather than something to sit on. I remember when I was a kid, my dad had an office where he's a physician. He had an office and it had a long hallway and he had one of those circular stools. And my sister and I used to just run up and down the hall with the stool as like a Superman cart, right? Yeah. So you would run and then just jump on the stool and the stool would just propel you as Superman. So, I mean, we were, you know, or she would go on the stool and I would push her you know, she was just like flying on the stool. So we were using furniture as play toys.
So you guys were playing, you know, and so that's like the thing that we've been kind of stripped of, because play, like being on the ground, is conflated with being ignorant, being immature, being dirty, being poor, maybe. You know, you should be making money. What are you playing? Who are you? Time to play?
Who has time to
Who's
play?
Time to play? You know, it's like, no. If you're a smart, well-adapted person, your life is play. If you look at like a hunter-gatherer tribe, which I haven't spent, yeah, I've been around like a lot of like, been through villages and such in Asia and South America and whatnot, but I haven't really like spent proper time with hunter-gatherer, but from, you know, my sense of it and talking to other people that have and, you know, all that stuff. I think sometimes we talk about things in podcast land and I'm like, wait, have I actually been there? Have I like lived with a hunter-gatherer tribe? And I always like want to kind of draw back and check myself.
Max, that's the next step.
Yeah.
You and me both.
I'm with that. I'm down. Seriously. You know, but their life, their work is one of play. It's one thing. You know, the experience of, oh, you know, the storm is coming. We have to figure out shelter. Okay, the animal. Okay, we're tracking the animal. It's like, that's not this rote task that I repeatedly do over and over again, checking my TPS reports and, you know, just staring into the screen because I got to get this stuff done because I need to, oh man, I got rents coming, my cell phone bills late, like, oh man, like that stress. You know, so the practice of being outside and living in that natural way, it's infused, it's conflated, that the play and work can be combined.
They're the same, and that's what we've been robbed of.
Yeah, which is what I'm doing my damnedest to make be my life. You know, I'm like, I'm really, and I know that within that, so my path has been maybe a little bit more obviously play-like because I'm like advocating play amongst other things. You know, doing this podcast is play. If this conversation is any good, we just play together. If it's any good, you know, if it's not, then we went into work mode and we, you know, distilled information for each other's programs. But if it's listenable, we played, we captured it. It was this magical little moment that will be recorded throughout history. And then we get to listen back like, oh, wow. I don't even remember what happened. Wow, look at that. Right. You get lost in the moment. You know, but if it's this repetitive thing, you might be lost in the moment because it's because you're daydreaming to like being able to play someplace.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we've gotten a little bit of play in so far.
Yeah, we're doing it.
So, okay, so we're sitting on the ground, we're sitting in the grass, and then we're also break eating, so we're hanging from stuff,
yeah.
Right? What else can people do? What are some other things? So we got five movement principles.
Five movement principles, man.
What are the other couple ones?
The other one, pay attention to your breath.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's another one that you have. It's like a toggle switch for your physiological state, your mental state, that you can wind up and wind down at any time. You know, so when you look at people, we talk about nose breathing particularly, but we also get into mouth breathing as that's a tool, but that's more just like, we describe it as like in a gear system, which I got from my buddy, Brian McKenzie, who's cited in there. Him and Rob Wilson, I think is his part. I haven't met Rob. But looking at breath as being a gear system that we can use to get the most out of ourselves. So when we are in neutral gear, which right now we're pretty much in like neutral first, in and out, depending upon how excited we get about break eating, we ought to be using our nose to be breathing because it's a system that's literally built for that, whereas the mouth is built for eating. You know, so when you're doing this, that breath through the nose is a few things, really cool things that happen. One thing that happens that's really fascinating is we naturally end up pressing the roof of our tongue our tongue up to the roof of our mouth, which acts as a subtle retainer for our teeth. So we're creating this outward expansion of our jawline as opposed to having this, if you look at people like mouth breathers, which is like a terrible name, mouth breathers, they're kind of chin like recedes back and they kind of got the double chin thing and they kind of have this like collapsive quality of their face. You can tell that person will not be an athlete. You know, so as we're breathing through our nose, as well, that restriction on the breath causes us to use more of our diaphragmatic muscles. So that breath starts to come down more into the low ribs and the back and acts as like a subtle traction for the back, even if you're breathing right. And it also sends a signal, because our cells don't have eyes, but they can feel us. It sends a signal that we're well, we're in that parasympathetic state, we're resting, we're digesting, we're healing. So that slowing down of that breath puts you into that more restorative state. Most of us are in a hyper wound up state throughout the day for various reasons. Maybe it's the alternating current blue lights in your house, or maybe it's the toxins in your environment, or maybe it's the stress of work, or you know, whatever it may be, or mechanical stress. You're walking around the world in such a way that's imbalanced, which creates a sends a signal of stress. So we can start to ameliorate some of that stress just through observing our breath, turning the toggle towards rest, digest, and heal. And yeah, we can take control of that. Or we can go to the other side and say, no, I want to go, you know, 9,000 RPMs. I want to go all out. Like, okay, cool. Like, let's do that. Let's go to the Audubon and like open it up. So with that, it's going to be more of a, you know, like Wim Hof or, you know, various different breathing practices throughout history. It's like, that's a similar thing. Or that looks a lot like huffing and puffing up the side of a mountain. You know, so if you don't have a mountain to climb, or you don't want to do a bunch of burpees to the point of needing to do that, you could even start to stimulate your nervous system, but just by sitting in place and replicating the breathing pattern of I'm going balls to the wall. You know, so just from us sitting here, we can play our internal toggles of the way that we think, the way that we feel, and the way that our body produces itself at a cellular level, just through augmenting our breath. But we never get that education in school, so we're kind of just, again, at the whim of culture. If you're at the whim of culture, you're dust in the wind in modern culture, you'll become one of the statistics.
I love that with the breath. It's such a powerful thing, and I forget it too often. And I've even noticed, and I think you've talked about this as well, that when we're nose breathing, if we extend the exhalation phase, yeah, it can be quite powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big thing. So there's no, people oftentimes will become overly focused or appreciative of the parasympathetic side of the nervous system, and the rest, I just like, no, that's just half the coin, man. You want to fight, you want to flight, you want to, you know, you want to go through that cortisol response, get up in the morning and like, wow, like roar, you know, it's not all rest. Like, we also want the other side of the equation, you know? And so when you're breathing in, if you ever get surprised, you go, you take that deep breath in. It's more of like a clavicular kind of like upper chest breath. You're ready to fight. You know, but if you are looking out into the distance, utilizing your panoramic vision, which is a whole chapter about how we can leverage sight as a tool, it's a big deal. But you're looking out into the distance, and you're with your, you know, your cave wife or cave boyfriend or whatever, and you're, you know, watching the waves come in or the mountains, and you do this, you do this long exhalation, and that's turning on that parasympathetic side now, because okay, we're chilling out now. You know, we survived the lion attack. We hunted the moose or whatever it was. Now we, that elongated exhalation comes in, and yeah, it sends that signal that it's time to chill the freak out. So if you're a person that's stressed out, you're going in to do a really important meeting or a public speaking thing, or you're got a date with a person that you're nervous about, while you're in your car, put yourself in a strong, upright, confident position, which there's all sorts of associations with that, of feeling better and your neurochemistry producing in such a way that makes you feel more confident, all that. You know, but also tap into your breath, because it's one of the tools, and emphasize a little bit longer exhalation. Maybe you can do a breath hold at the end as well. You know, and so the reason that we crave air is because of that CO2 buildup. If you take out air for a little bit, just like a fast, in a sense, you're like fasting from air, all of a sudden our body becomes more resistant to that buildup of CO2, and you become a more robust respirator. And so now I'm like, if you drop me in some water and I couldn't breathe, it wouldn't be that big of a deal compared to someone that is all day long just overbreathing. Drop them in that survival situation and they're going straight to panic. And it literally might be the difference between them surviving and not. Like, you starting to pay attention to your physiology today could be the difference of you saving your own life or someone else's in 6 months.
Yeah, not always having to take the next breath immediately, being able to just pause between the breaths. This is like the Buteyko style of breathing.
Yeah,
this,
exactly.
This kind of, being able to tolerate it, a little bit of CO2 retention is probably a really good thing. And we both appreciate that as surfers.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to get more into free diving to kind of cultivate these breathing techniques and this ability to hold the breath. But yeah, this is such a powerful tool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so you want your body to be as adaptable as possible, you know, and when you pull out those potentials for adaptation, I think the body gets maybe anxious, maybe almost like confused, you know? And so what we'll find is a body that is able to adapt to something like there not being air. You know, if you can maintain your calm in that, it could be like the difference of like a death or not scenario. But it also allows you, that's the far end of the spectrum, you know, but then in that situation, beyond, pull it back to more like middle of the spectrum where you're just in an important meeting or something, you cope well with stress, you practice it. So if you're coping well with stress, and it takes, you need a real stressful situation for you to get stressed out. Whereas some, like, you know, Barbie person in North Hollywood or whatever, that's just like consumed by their cell phone and everything is brought to them and they just expect the world to just be like brought to them in a platter. That person is a stress bomb waiting to happen because they don't have any opportunities to adapt. If you don't regularly adapt to various different stressors, when a real stress happens, it's going to be a very uncomfortable situation. You know, and so that breath is one thing that we could take into, you know, account on a regular basis. Another stressor that we could take into account is, we mentioned before, like cold. You know, so there was a specific study you probably heard of where the researchers dunked rat pups, you know, baby rats, into a cold plunge regularly throughout the day as they were growing up. And what they found is the rats that were exposed to that cold with regularity, when they were adults, they coped better with stress. You know, so at a young age, you said, you're not going to read a book and learn about coping with stress. You're not going to read a book and learn about meditation. You're going to read a book and learn about hunting. You're like, the way that you learn to hunt is you fucking hunt. The way that you learn to cope with stress is you do stuff that's a subtle, hermetic micro stress that's containable so that you can build and develop from that. If you do not do that, I think the body starts to like collapse in on itself.
And so having little bits of micro stress, definitely a good thing. These environmental micro stresses, you know, the heat, the cold, the exercise, the oxygen starvation for a short amount of time. Yeah,
you got to enjoy it. You got to embrace inconvenience. You know, that's the guy. What was the restaurant? I have it in the book. Is it Momofuku? Or I forget what it's called. Restauranteur, super famous. I'm spacing the name of it right now. But he coined this idea. I'm paraphrasing, but like, it's like we do things the long, hard, stupid way. You know, it's like when they're making food, like, yeah, we do it. You know, we don't buy the processed package, plastic bag, you know, plop it on a plate. And I'm like, no, we do it the long, hard, stupid way. You know, it's like, so, and then when you get that food, you can, it's like, oh, wow. I can like taste the history.
The quality,
yeah.
It's enormously different.
So what they're doing is they're embracing the inconvenience of doing things that way and immersing themselves in the process of creating that dish. We can do that in our lives. You know, so by doing things the long, hard, stupid way in your life, you know, embracing a little bit of healthy inconvenience, something that a person could do, for example, this would help in various different levels, but you could put your cell phone away from you while you're working. Then every time you have the need to check your messages or you got to send somebody a text or something, you have to get up off the floor because you're sitting on the floor, which is another great adaptation. You get up all the way up off of the floor. Essentially, it's like a Turkish get up you could do. You know, so that's what you pay a personal trainer to have you do because you don't have it in your life. You know, so you get up off of the ground, you go through that range of motion, you heal your joints by taking them through their full range. And then you walk, which consolidates memories and is helpful with neurological development. It's helpful with like you being able to absorb that information that you've been, you know, hopefully so diligently working on for the last, hopefully not much more than like a half hour. You know, so you get up from that, you take a break, you take a walk, maybe you expose yourself, maybe put your phone intentionally in a place that forces you to walk through sun. Maybe put it in your phone in a place that forces you to be around nature. So you have to walk outside for a second.
Bury your phone in the ground.
Yeah, whatever. You put it in your back porch or something. I'm just being silly. But like you intentionally make it so that your body is forced to adapt to these positive factors. you just do that simple thing, like this means it's ridiculous, that would have such a huge impact on your health and your wellness. But it doesn't cost anything at all. You know, and so instead of doing something as simple as that, you know, we're like spending heaps of money on supplements and strange exercise machines and ab thrusters and adductors and ab curlers. It's like, dude,
sit on the floor, get up off the floor,
yeah. It's
so breathe not- through your nose,
and your body responds better to that.
Hang from a bar and look and be in nature.
Yeah, and walk is the other one of the other principles.
The
so the books, so the book's broken down into five movement principles because that's what publishers demand essentially, because it helps, you know, it's makes it approachable. You know, you'd be like, oh cool, five principles. Oh cool, I want to be stress proof and strong and flexible. Like great, I'll check it out. But the book's like way more than that. It is written in very simplistic terms. You know, but it's like the first section gets into posture and personality, you know, so the way that I've essentially been kind of describing it throughout this, but our physical movement makes us feel and think a certain way. It even changes the way that we access memories, which is really fascinating. And so there are two ends of the same rope or two sides of the same coin. You know, the way that you inhabit your physical body, there's no separation of now I'm doing fitness, now I'm doing nutrition, now I'm doing communication, now I'm doing work. Like all of those are kind of wrapped up, you know? And so if you're feeling a certain way, you're feeling maybe brain foggy, or you're feeling maybe a little bit shy or maybe a little bit sad or what have you, a really helpful tool to be able to look into would be literally your postural patterns. Are you living in a structural mold in your day-to-day life that kind of pulls you into a position of like being a little bit more kind of like down? You know, if you are and you're on anti whatevers, you know, and you're buying 5-HTP from the supplement store, and you're trying to figure this stuff out. But meanwhile, you're hunched over in this depressed position, staring into a phone that's inherently stressful. You know, it's like, what the hell are we talking about?
Totally agree. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Why are we taking supplements and doing all these things until we've got just the absolute basics done?
Yeah, look at the basics first, you know, and then I don't have any, like I said on we're on your podcast, on my podcast before. So like, where are we? We're sitting in the same place.
Who knows what podcast we're on right now.
Anyways, on the other side, I don't claim to know anything about like nutritional conversations, you know, so in the realms of like supplements and all that stuff, I mean, there might be experts or something that know, you know, have opinions that have meaning or value. But I think that everyone can agree that if you are not following some of these basic fundamentals of being a healthy, robust human that you get from nature, if you are not getting those baselines, then what would be the point of going beyond that to start? Like first, like fill in all those blanks that we're essentially talking about in this conversation. There's you know, there's a handful of other ones. Community is a huge one. The longest longitudinal study, I think it was done in Harvard. I'm pretty sure it started in 1936.
This is like the 75-year study. This is I forget the guy's name, Weinstein maybe.
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. So they followed students through their lives, and then also their offspring or their kids. It's funny when you talk about like research and science stuff, how all of a sudden it's like instead of just saying like my kids, it becomes offspring. With like fasting, it's like, what's your feeding window? You mean like, do you mean like when I ate lunch? Like what are you you're feeding? What did you feed?
We have to make it sound fancy, man. This is what we do.
Yeah, what did I feed? Right. Or whatever. But what they find in that long ass study was that the people that did the best were the people that had meaningful community in their lives. Now, so we are creatures that thrive as a nutrient on purpose and connection and community and integration. And if you take away that nutrient of physical contact, for example, with youth especially, but adults, it's the same thing. But it's more obvious with like a baby. They go through this thing called failure to thrive. You know, so they literally don't develop because they're getting the signal from the outside world that, okay, it's not a safe time to start boosting up my metabolism and growing and turning over cells and going through all this development. It's not the time. I should hibernate. So they back in. And now all of a sudden the other kids are getting bigger and stronger. Everyone's eating the same diet, you know, but these kids didn't get that mechanical signal that they're loved through physical contact. So it's like, I feel strongly that the idea of nutrition is bigger than just the things that go into our mouth. I think nutrition, I think photons from sun, it's nutrition, man. You know, your mitochondria creates ATP from exposure to sun.
Well, not totally, but
oh, go on, tell me about it. That's what I heard. That's what I read. But tell me about it.
There, you know, in the mitochondrial membrane, there is a protein called cytochrome C, which is a light receptor. Yeah. But technically, and I'm sure you know this, the way that mitochondria are creating electricity or energy essentially is from the movement of electrons that are from food. So it's mostly from food, but there does appear to be a photon receptor in mitochondria, but it's not quite like that.
But if we're not exposed to sun, then, okay, so ATP, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. That's stuff that I read and regurgitate. If we're not exposed to sun, things get pretty wonky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I loved what you said earlier about sunlight being much more important than just vitamin D.
Yeah.
And I think that we know that. And I think that we don't even understand fully the way that the photons from the sun interact with our mitochondria, but the main way that we understand energy is being made there right now is with these sort of NADH2 and FADH from the Krebs cycle and the breakdown of these macronutrients in our bodies. But yeah, but there is a light receptor in the
I appreciate this learning moment. So what is the relationship of sun, mitochondria, ATP? Where is it? I obviously oversimplified that. Like, can you explain
I don't think we know, other than the fact the cytochrome C molecule receives photons. And cytochrome C is one of the proteins in the electron transport chain, which moves these electrons through. And that movement of electrons creates this concentration gradient of hydrogen ions. And then the hydrogen ions move down their concentration gradient through an ATP rotor pump that makes the ATP molecule. So I think as far as we know right now, sunlight, light in general, may be contributing to the flow of electrons somehow, but the majority of electrons are coming from food that we're breaking down. Hmm. So there's probably something going on there, but we don't fully understand it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
But we don't, I mean, I guess you can put somebody in a room that has no light and they won't die. Right. Yeah. But well,
there's even therapy, but it's like a Czech thing amongst other places. They have in Guatemala, they have all over the place. Taking people out of the sun and out of any form of light for, you know, extended periods of time, anywhere from like, you know, a few days to like more than that, like 12 days I've seen, where their body, essentially it's like, I don't know enough about it, honestly. We reference, deprivation, tanks in the book.
I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like removing our senses in general. But I don't claim any expertise in it. But it is very interesting to see some of the beneficial results that's happened with people of removing all stimuli. But I think there's more to that conversation. It's like so much more to that conversation than just the removal of light. I think it's just removing all the senses. They have more bandwidth to go in and address other deeply held issues that may have been there since who knows how long. I think that's a primary thing with that. You know, anyways.
Yeah, I love the idea of sensory deprivation, whether it's in a sensory deprivation tank, or I heard you talk about this on a different podcast, these completely dark rooms. And that's such an interesting thing for humans. We're so overstimulated now that imagine what comes up when we do that.
Yeah, you only have so much bandwidth at a time, you know? And so if you're, I think this is the root, one of the primary roots of ailments of the technological age is our, specifically social media age. Our extra bandwidth is a commodity. So your consciousness, like there's no such thing as a free lunch or, you know, free dinner or free social, free Instagram or free Facebook or free Twitter. You know, you being on there, they are hunting for your consciousness. Any extra bandwidth that you have to offer, they want it because they can sell ads with your consciousness.
I hate that. I hate that. It makes me so mad. It is. It's like our attention is being sold.
Absolutely. And so where your attention could be going could be internal work. It could be external work. It could be writing your book. It could be doing your fitness. It could be loving relationships, which is, you know, so says science, is like the number one thing we can do to heal our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I think there's so many angles on this.
And I think that we see that with the blue zones. I talk about the blue zones in my book and I debunk them, or I I rail against the inconsistencies regarding diet.
Yeah.
But one of the congruities, one of the commonalities among all the Blue Zones is community.
Yeah.
And many other things, and meaningful life and family time. And so I love that study. I think it's Weinstein from Harvard. It's like the 75-year study, I think what it's called. And I loved when I heard that Tim Ferriss was talking to him, or someone else was talking to him on this podcast, and they were talking about this, the crucial nature of community. And I love that you brought this up. I agree with you 100%. Nutrition is about more than food.
Yeah.
And I talk about this in my book as well, which is that we need to get the food right. And I think that that's the ongoing conversation that we're all a part of. And these other pieces that you're talking about in this book are really the other pieces of nutrition that are so often forgotten.
I appreciate that, man.
So yeah. And yeah, that's the stuff, the movement, the being in nature, the grounding, the looking at things that are far away, the break eating, the breathing. These are the other nutritional pieces that we're forgetting. Hunting, doing wild things, playing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially that was my intention with writing the book, was to break down those absolute baseline fundamentals, including like the sounds in your environment. You know, so there's a whole chapter about the way sound affects your physiology and how you can leverage that as a tool for fitness and wellness. You know, similar thing, the way that we can adjust that toggle switch of with our breath or with our eyes that we alluded to for a bit. Same thing with sounds. If you're living in an environment that's, you know, you're chronically stressed out, and you live beside beeping, honking traffic and sirens, and you know, you have maybe neighbors are yelling and fighting, and there's an abusive relationship next door, and like there's, you know, and you have a ringing sound happening and a beeping of the fridge and blah, blah, like what the hell do you think, how do you think your nervous system feels? You know, so back, not to romanticize kids, but they're interesting with a lot of this stuff because they're just so darn sensitive and honest. If they don't like someone's voice or they don't like a room, they cry, they freak out. You know, adults, we learn to like, I don't like that, but it wouldn't be appropriate for me to leave or for me to do something. I'm just, okay, pack it in. Oh man, this is making me feel crazy, but I'm just going to keep packing in and move on with my life. You know, and so I think something we can do is we can look at the soundscape of our environment and use that as another tool of, it gets a little bit more slippery, but almost like a form of at least nervous system nutrition, you know, and maybe bring some wind chimes into your home, or maybe get like a water burbler or some water sound, or, you know, what do they call them? Gray noise? What's the noise?
Yeah.
Whatever noise.
Yeah. White noise. White or gray noise.
Yeah. Because whatever it may be, something that's, you know, pay attention to the type of music that you have environment and the effect that music has on you. You know, so I think it would be a valuable thing for people listening to do a quick audit of the room that you're in right now and observe the various different sounds in that room as though you're like going to see a symphony. Because it's essentially what you are. You know, life is a dance and life is music. And this room that you're in is the, you know, it's the, you could call it the, when you're out in nature, it's the biophony. You know, it's the sound of the birds chirping and maybe the, you know, the, you know, all the sounds that come out. With people, it'd be the anthropony. So you go into a mall, you're hearing the anthropony. You're hearing all the, someone yells. And then like everything is music, if you want to look at it that way. And so just do right now, just do a quick audit of wherever you're at and observe those sounds and really feel into like, how does that sound make me feel? You know, does it make me feel calm? Does it make me feel like I'm in a digestive state? Like it would be a good time to digest food in this place. You know, it'd be a good time to like really absorb and sit and take in. Or does it make me feel more defensive? Or does it make me feel more aggressive? Does it make me feel, because all of those are valuable, knowing how to, you know, you'd rather be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. Like knowing how to be defensive is great. You know, having some punk rock, whatever you're into, it's like nothing wrong with any sound. Just realize that you are being played by those sounds, and you can, if you understand them, you can, and you have intention to observe them, then you can start to augment that environment. So all of a sudden you have more control over your autonomic nervous system than what we thought. Yeah, so our autonomic nervous is like, oh, you don't control your autonomic. It's like, I don't know, because I can mechanically, like you talk about animals could walk away from predators, you know, I can use my hands to adjust the temperature of the room, to adjust the sounds of the room, to adjust my breath, to adjust what I'm looking at or not looking at, which adjusts my autonomic nervous system state. Whoa, okay, I think I'm in control.
Totally in control. Yeah, you've got the tile. We've got the toggle, man. It's right there. And that's cool. I mean, that's I love that you're describing all those toggles in the book. So that's awesome. Yeah. I love it, dude. Thank you so much. Where can people find more of your stuff? The book is called The Align Method. Yeah. You've got The Align Podcast, which I just had an interview for.
Jump Over. I'll release this at probably the same time, whenever we put it out. So the podcast, I've been doing that for the last 5 years. That's been like a really beautiful, fascinating journey of recording something like 270 conversations at this point. So that's been a really beautiful experience. And a lot of the book is comprised of what I've gathered from like the brightest people that I can find and extracting their ideas and kind of putting them into this book that's labeled a movement book. But I mean, it's a lot more than that.
It's like a life nutrition book.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm shooting for with it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Get the book. Bookstores, The Align Method. When this goes out, it'll absolutely be, you know, anywhere you find books, The Align Method will be there.
Awesome. And then Instagram is The Align Podcast.
Everything's Align Podcast. Yeah. So Align Podcast. So that's website, Instagram, and the podcast.
I love it. Thanks for coming on, brother. Oh,
thank you.
Always the question that I always ask.
Oh, hit me.
Question.
Yeah.
What is the most radical thing that you have done recently?
Oh, radical. Man.
Radical.
I would say most radical thing. Let me give me a second here. I like this quite. This is a good one. I know what I did. I threw for the first time a birthday party. It wasn't for my own birth. It was for the birth of the book. This is just like maybe 4 days ago, 5 days ago or so. And it was radical to me because I've never thrown any party for myself ever in my life. It's one of the most uncomfortable things I could possibly do. There's a little bit of like perhaps like a fear of abandonment or like, you know, not being enough. And so if I throw a thing in the name of Aaron and it's not enough, that's like a deep wound of sorts. And so in this situation, you know, in the book, my face is on the cover and my name is on the cover. And, you know, it's like on the invite, it's like, all right, Aaron's book, come out and celebrate. We did it, and it ended up being this huge, amazing, brilliant success. And got to have kind of completely take in appreciation from this community that was far more robust than I had anticipated. And to just sit in that and receive appreciation in that way and not try to dodge it and put it back on them, or which I did do that, of course, like this is all about you, but to take a step back and take a moment and receive in that way, that was probably one of the more radical things that I've done for a long time.
I love it. I wish I could have been there, but I was on the East Coast, White Oak Pastures, doing a thing there. But yeah,
next time we'll probably do another one.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on, my friend. Thank you for spending the day and shooting the bow.
It's great, dude.
It's
thank
rad.
You. I appreciate
I look forward
it.
To next time, my
yeah,
man.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, you guys. Hope you enjoyed that podcast. Like I said in the beginning, the book is live. It's live and in charge. Live and alive. Live and alive. Live and what rhymes with live? Live and jive. Live and jiving. It's like state dancing. The book is state dancing everywhere all the time right now. Go to Amazon, thecarnivorecodebook.com. Thanks to Aaron for the show. It was super fun. I look forward to moving with him soon, shooting the bow again with him soon. We had all kinds of good times when he came down for this podcast. Check him out at The Align Podcast, and his book is worth your attention. All right, you guys, when this podcast comes out, I will be in Salt Lake City, Utah, skiing at Snowbird with my buddies. So I'm in Utah, getting into the mountains, living my radical life, and celebrating as the book is out, and I hope that you guys are loving it. Please leave this podcast a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to it if you enjoy it, and help me support this work by giving me good feedback. What am I doing good? What do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of? And there are no sponsors in these bonus episodes. This is all just my stuff, and I hope you guys, again, will give me some feedback and let me know what you enjoy and what you don't. Okay, so that is what was going on with me. I'm going to be doing all kinds of fun media stuff in the future. This next week's podcast on Tuesday is going to be an awesome Ask Me Anything podcast I did for Ben Greenfield. There's chock full of information there. We've got some doozies coming up in the next few weeks, so stay tuned, you guys. Love you all. Stay radical.